Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a senior lecturer in classics and ancient history at La Trobe University. This is episode XCII, the beginning of the end of the Republic. The Roman Republic had a relatively good run, and close to 400 years after it was established, it was still going strong. It was towards the end of the 2nd century BCE that the establishment came under challenge, and in fact we can put a year on it, 133 BCE. In this year there were two significant deaths that would kick off the beginning of the end for the Roman Republic. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
One claim that Roman historians make is that the fall of the Republic begins, so the beginning of the end, is in 133 BCE. It's very hard to put a precise date on when something starts to happen in history.
I'm surprised you can put a year on it, though, because it takes time for things to break down. But there's certain things that happen in that year.
It's very much an emblematic year. Obviously, as in all of this periodization, it's an after-the-fact addition. But until that point, some of these forces have been gathering, but that year there are two really big events that seem to throw into focus all of the problems that the Romans will have for the next century and a bit.
Okay, so you said that there's two events that happen in this year. So what are they?
The first one looks really good for Rome, and that is that Attalus III of Pergamum dies and he leaves his empire to Rome.
Yeah, right.
Just like that. He's actually a leftover of Alexander's empire. Right, so the Pergamene Empire is one of those divisions that came out of Alexander the Great dying in the late 4th century.
And dividing it up between his empire. Generals, yeah.
So that empire goes on until Attalus III. And there's still a lot of argument about why Attalus III left Rome in his empire, but it seems to me that the most rational explanation is that he thought that Rome would step in and take it if he didn't give it to them, and at least they might get good terms if Rome were given that empire. But there are other forces going on there. So when we talk about Pergamum, by the way, we're talking about basically modern Turkey. And that's vastly wealthy. And it becomes a province, the province of Asia. So Rome's empire is starting to build up. It's nowhere near the size that we might think of if we think of a map of the Roman Empire that includes Britain and France and modern France.
It's broadly just Rome and Greece and a few other things at this point in between, isn't it?
Well, if we're talking about 133, Roman Empire is not huge at this point, but they've got control in Spain, Greece, a little bit of Africa.
So getting Pergamum is a big deal to them at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It extends the empire and it brings a lot of money in. Obviously, this makes social change. One of the things it does is makes the wealthy more wealthy.
Yeah.
And the Romans start to think of it, certainly later, as one of the points at which they become more dissolute. They think of this as a moral problem in many ways. And 133, they think, oh, you know, we got too much wealth then. Life became too easy. It only became easy for some people, it has to be said, because at the other end of this, it's becoming harder for some people. So in our basic constitutional background podcast, we talked about the landless poor and how that situation's being created by senatorial and rich Romans buying up vast amounts of land. That's really coming to a head at this point. And there is now some political will to deal with that. So the other thing that happens in 133 BCE is that a man called Tiberius Gracchus, who comes from a really incredibly aristocratic family, he becomes tribune of the plebs, one of the tribunes of the plebs, and he decides that we need land reform and he's going to do something about it. Okay. So we have this first attempt at a land bill.
So Tiberius comes from old money, from an old senatorial family. What's the benefit of him bringing a land bill up at this point?
Well, actually, that's interesting. When we talk about optimates and populares, we mentioned that kind of factionalism where the populares seem to care more about the ordinary people, but it might just be a way of gaining political power. I don't think we can actually attach that to Tiberius Gracchus. He doesn't seem to be just after power. He seems to genuinely see this as a problem that needs some kind of resolution. Now, it might not just be from the goodness of his heart, in that, you know, these landless poor are flooding into Rome and Rome can't feed them. and they're actually having to import grain in order to feed them. So right, it's a kind of treasury problem as well, because there is something called the corn dole. Every Roman citizen is meant to be fed at least. They have this kind of early form of welfare, which I guess is quite progressive in some ways. And he thinks that the solution to this, rather than keep importing grain and feeding them, is to give them land. It's kind of that if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, but if you teach him how to fish. So as opposed to just giving them a bag of grain, you don't know that one.
Why do I remember if you make a man a fire, you keep him warm for a night, but if you set a man on fire, you keep him warm for the rest of his life?
That's obviously some kind of piss take of the original very high-minded statement.
Oh, it's Terry Pratchett.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there you go, piss take it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a parody, you might say, to be elegant. Okay, so as opposed to just dealing with this problem on an ad hoc basis, feed the people when they're hungry, let's try and give them a more long-term solution, which is if they have land to grow their own food, they won't be this problem of the landless poor.
Okay, so this has been a good opportunity getting bequeathed this land by good old King Attalus, but it's not happening in practice.
Well, it's not so much the land, which is, you know, quite distanced from Italy, and they're not actually moving people.
Yeah,
they're not quite at that point where, well, it will happen. Later on, they'll be putting veterans in founding colonies, basically, in other parts of Europe. Certainly, the revenue that comes from this should help. But what he wants to do is use some public land and buy up some senatorial land. So this affects the senators personally. Mm. They might lose some of their land, which is what their authority is based on. And they're able to work this land with the slaves who have been brought into Rome from Rome's conquests. So everything's kind of tied together. Rome building its territorial empire has led to this power and all of this more or less free labor coming into Italy, allowing senatorial aristocratic men to build their land and their power.
Yeah.
But that at the same time has deprived vast numbers of the poor of their means of subsistence.
Okay.
Right? So you've got a society that's going in two directions.
All right. So he's got 1 year in the role of tribune of the plebs. So he introduces his bill, and I take it goes down brilliantly with the Senate.
Well, there is much debate of it. It's called the Lex Sempronius, named after his middle name, Sempronius. And it doesn't really matter what anybody thinks about it, because Tiberius Gracchus is not the only tribune. There are other tribunes and they all have the right of veto, and one of them vetoes it.
Mm.
All right, so Tiberius Gracchus has failed to get his land bill through.
So another tribune of the plebs, also acting in the best view of the people.
Supposedly.
Okay.
But obviously, even by this point, we can say that some of them are in the pocket of the senatorial faction.
This is Octavius, isn't it? Not the Octavius.
Yes,
it's
It's vetoed by the tribune who's called Marcus Octavius. Don't confuse him with the man who's going to become Augustus. He's not born yet. So rather than just laying down and thinking, oh, I've failed, never mind, I'll try again, Gracchus turns to somewhat drastic measures, which is to have him removed from office.
Octavius.
Yeah.
So remove your opposition. So this is another bill. This is going to go to a people vote.
He seems to just push him out.
Yeah.
And it's a really drastic measure. Really, he's acting unconstitutionally. You can't just push out a fellow tribune. And Gracchus is now on the path of acting unconstitutionally, perhaps for what we might think of as the best of reasons, but he's not following the rules of the Roman Republic.
But really, when you get down to it, he's almost got a point, because the opposition that he's getting to the bill and the way that the Senate vetoed it isn't really in the spirit of the Republic either.
Yeah, this is a token of the way that the Republic is no longer functioning. So
I can see why you start this at 133 BC.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
You can see also why the idea that the tribune should act for the people, but it's not happening anymore, as you pointed out, is a kind of measure of how the Roman Republic's not functioning anymore. It's only going to get worse, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So Gracchus tries another ploy, which is he tries to use the money that they've got from Attalus, the Attalid treasury, to fund a land commission, at least talk about this and find a way to divide up some land. The Senate gets very antsy about this and they have him murdered.
Yes, okay.
So 133 is the year when the Romans gain immense wealth And they also kill off one of their own magistrates, a man who's been voted in to power to stand for the people.
All right, so that's really taking the law into your own hands. That's, yeah, completely disregarding everything that you're meant to be standing for. And I'm sure it was a grisly kind of public, disorganized, off-the-cuff kind of execution as well.
Yes, this hasn't gone to a court of law and then...
No court of law, no vote, no anything like that. It's just, I've got a big stick.
This is extrajudicial
murder. I've got a table leg. Was this a table leg death?
Yes, it's nasty.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't want to go into too okay, much detail just because it's a great story.
Spoilers.
We can do in
spoilers.
The time
okay.
podcast.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so those are the events of 133 BCE. And in the last podcast, we spoke about precedence and how much the Romans love that. Did this affect things going forward?
Well, in some ways, it meant that nothing had changed and the same problems were still there.
Okay.
And I guess it affected things going forward in as much as increasingly, we'll see in the first century and even before this century ends, murdering your political opponents becomes something that is feasible.
Mm.
It's something that we see quite a few times. So we're sort of setting off for a period where if somebody doesn't agree with you, then killing them is not out of the question. So politics becomes really dangerous.
Yeah.
It really does. So wait till we get to the first century. There's a year where nobody's really prepared to stand for consul, and we just have one consul because things are so bad.
Wow, yeah.
We're not quite at that point yet. As this goes on, it actually starts to accrue other issues as well. So in the decade following Tiberius Gracchus's murder, the land issue is still there. The land problem does not go away. But there are also issues from the Italian allies, as they're called. Now, something that I haven't made clear is that Rome and Roman citizenship technically only applies to Rome itself.
Mm-hmm.
The whole of Italy doesn't have the same kind of rights. All right, that's why they're called the allies. So the Italian allies pay a different kind of band of taxes. They do pay taxes, and they also don't have as many legal rights as Roman citizens themselves. And even within that, there are Latin rights. So if you're in that part around Rome, then you've got certain rights. And if you're beyond that, you have fewer rights.
Okay.
So there's kind of Romans, Latins, Italians. And there's a real social hierarchy there, social and legal hierarchy. And the Italians are getting very sick of this. So they're building up to what we'll see in the next century is called the Social War. It's my favorite name for a war because it sounds so friendly, but it really isn't. It's the War of the Allies.
Yeah. Sounds like a cricket game.
But we can see even in this century that people are worried about that and are trying to address that because these are the two big social issues. What is the status of the Italian allies? What the hell are we going to do about the land problem?
Yeah.
And this is something that Tiberius's brother, Gaius Gracchus, tries to solve with one bill that he brings in 10 years later when he is tribune of the people, which he must have known was a very dangerous position for him to be in after what had happened to his brother.
And to essentially be bringing up the same problems again.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a sort of issue you can either shy away from and have a very quiet year as tribune of the plebs, or just kind of go, nah, let's try and go back to this well and see how we go.
Yeah, and he tries to bring in a whole package of measures. So what he wants to do is, let's address the problem of feeding the people in the city. One of the ways we'll do this is by reducing the price of grain. At least that'll work as a short-term measure.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we want to have more long-term land reform. So that's also brought into this package. Also, he goes a bit wider. He doesn't hold back from attacking the senatorial power base. He says senators, or magistrates rather, can get away with doing what they want because they know that after their year in office, after they've been consul or praetor, they might get brought up for extortion.
Mm.
All right? People might say, oh, you've just been feathering your own nest. I'm going to put you on trial. But they know that they're going to be tried by their peers because they're tried in the Senate and these are their friends, their mates.
And they're potentially all doing it themselves anyway, you know.
So there's conflict of interests there, I suppose, you would say.
So let me ask, the people that he's working with, his essentially his work colleagues, some of them would have been responsible for killing his brother, surely, 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's going up against the same people and he's packaging all these
Yeah.
Reform ideas together, which sounds like a really strange way to try and get a lot done at once.
It's true. It seems very dangerous.
Is he trolling the Senate?
It does seem like that, and it doesn't work out well, as we'll see. But maybe he thought that things had moved on and this was the time to do it and to make his stand. What he's trying to do is really social engineering in some ways, because he's trying to shift that extortion court, for example. He wants to give it over to the next level down and say you can only be judging this if you're an equestrian. And if you're an equestrian, you've still got a lot of wealth, but you don't have the ability, you know, you're not going to become one of the magistrates. You're not in the Senate.
Yeah.
So you're being judged by somebody else. It's an independent body, at least in theory. It's really terrifying to the senators, especially the corrupt ones, that they won't have this opportunity to kind of brush their crimes under the carpet. And along with all of this, he also wants to extend Roman rights, or at least Latin rights, to the Italian allies.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a whole stock of things from providing corn to the ordinary people, to changing social hierarchies, to changing ethnic rights, really. He's really trying to do major cultural reform. And it's really that last one, extending citizenship to the whole of Italy, which is, you know, there's going to have to be a war for this to happen in the end. And that's the one that's too much for the Senate. So when Gaius Gracchus is re-elected, so it's a one-year term, but as tribune of the plebs, you can be re-elected, and he was, the Senate has him murdered too. They just don't want him to have this opportunity to put this law through.
But, I mean, with Tiberius, there seemed to be a lot of back and forth. It seems like nobody would back down. And the murder of Tiberius feels like a boiling over point. Now it just seems like an easy solution.
Well, I think that it's a position that...
It's precedence.
Yeah, there is precedent. And the Senate is showing that it's really sticking its heels in here, that they won't move. There's a stubbornness. We won't try and resolve this problem of the Italian allies and the starving poor. Anyone who does this, we are going to get rid of. So this has really made the divisions very concrete and very violent.
Yeah.
And it's something that continues to brew on. I guess that by the end of the century, there is an even more pressing issue for those in power in Rome, which is that they're going to be attacked by somebody from outside of Rome. The Gauls are going to attack Rome. So in a way, that stalls it for a bit longer. And we're going to see the rise of warlords, partly because they're involved in that battle of keeping the Gauls out of Rome, and also another conflict, the one Sallust writes about with Jugurtha in Africa. So we're going to have some external conflict which will hold off these issues for a while. But, you know, this is decades and decades of this problem not being resolved. And that means that you've really got long-standing resentment amongst a lot of the Roman populace and the Italian population. And this is going to lead to a lot of trouble. If the Senate had given way in 133 and allowed these relatively minor land reforms, would they have avoided the end of the Republic? Someone should write a novel.
I don't think that they were relatively minor to the Roman Senate. So this is a problem that continues. So in the last episode, we had that quote from Pliny. So that was still a problem in his time that they hadn't resolved yet. But what I am kind of curious about is, it's a major step to suddenly go, okay, I'm going to murder the tribune of the plebs because I don't agree with him and he's being too difficult. So were there repercussions of it?
No, because the power base of the Senate agrees with this, they refuse to prosecute anybody involved in it.
Okay.
So they get off scot-free.
Yeah.
Of course, this leads to even more resentment, but at the same time, there's no legal way of dealing with this. So either you have a rebellion, an open rebellion, and you take cudgels to each other, or you put up with the Senate's decree on this. There's only a few people with the will to make a change who will sort of appear from time to time and then get put down that are willing to lift their head above the parapet. And that's because the consequences have been so very violent and horrific. The Gracchi become kind of emblematic. And of course, they're the perfect couple for this terrible sacrifice that they've endured.
Oh, martyrdom. Because
and they're brothers, and they come from this aristocratic and wealthy family. It's easy to romanticize and probably wrong to romanticize them, but they do stand as a symbol of all of the problems of what's happening at the beginning of the end.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, Senior Lecturer in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can find it in Apple Podcasts or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Please leave a review, we value the feedback, and it helps those sneaky Apple algorithms spread the word of the podcast. If you look up the Emperors of Rome in Facebook, you'll find we have a page there. Come and give it a like, and you can follow both myself and Rhiannon Evans on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I am at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, the Roman Republic struggles with the rise of the dictator and civil war. But until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.